Welcome back, everybody. Pickers Market episode 65. I'm Kyle. We've got Lisa, Tyler, and Keith. Dream team in the office here.
Back in.
Kyle's
back
first in. Time hosting.
That's right.
What? Yeah.
That's right.
Not the clap, Tyler.
Maybe a clap later.
Yeah. Yeah.
See how well he does.
Well, we're getting into the thick of it. It's going to be earnings. We're going to dive into that in a minute here. But before we do, I've decided to take the two truths and a lie and invert it.
Oh.
Make it a little trickier. It's one truth and two lies.
Look at that.
I don't know if anybody noticed that.
I didn't read that part.
I read that wrong.
Good.
Because I had my lie picked out already.
Invert that.
Oops.
So the first one, A, is the SEC mandates that public companies hold earnings calls to communicate financial results. B, companies in the S&P 500 are not required to report earnings within 30 days of the quarter's end. Or C, stock buybacks announced during earnings seasons are illegal under the U.S. securities law. This is known as a blackout period. Keith, what do you think?
Wow.
Put you right on the spot.
Well, I'm saying A is not true. The mandate, because there's certain companies I remember. I was like, they don't have any conference call. They don't report. They don't do anything. So that's a lie. I'm going with. Then B and C, I would have to, you get a little trick in here. One of these, I don't know if it's 30 days or 45. And then the stock buy, I'm going with C is that one's another lie.
Mm. So you're saying B is the truth.
B is the truth.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
Tyler, listeners are waiting.
Yeah, I know. I feel like B are not required to report earnings within 30 days.
That threw me off as well.
I'm gonna go with B as well.
Mm.
That one sounds.
He's got that double negative. Who knows what's going on?
This is
on.
Like
30, 45.
This is like you actually inspired me, Lisa, to write these
the way that I did,
because
days.
I know you're doing the CFA, so double negatives.
Oh my God, yeah,
I literally put it in there, and I'm like,
and another
this
one,
then
yep.
All right, Lisa, nail it. So, what do you got for us?
Yeah, I am actually. I should be good at that, right? Because
right.
I'm currently having all the psychological test taking. Things going on. I think C is a lie. There's always earnings season. It feels like, so I don't think this is true. The other two are tricky. Companies in it are not required. Okay, so we need the truth, right?
Yep.
I go with B as well.
You guys are too good.
Too good.
All of you are too good.
Really?
Yeah. It's 40 days.
Yeah.
You were close. Okay. It was 40. And certain companies, depending on the market cap, can be 60.
Oh,
which is
okay,
longer than than you think. But yeah, I guess I didn't really appreciate the
40.
It's an odd number, but the small and mid cap experience you have, I thought when I wrote that A, the SEC mandates public companies hold earnings calls, the first name that popped into my mind was Tootsie, like Tootsie Roll. And because they do report,
yep.
They used to host calls, but they are not, you know, historically reaching out and taking analyst calls and that kind of thing. They're pretty quiet on the home front. So a lot of companies, smaller companies do that. So
the one that was bigger that we actually own my previous job was JB Hunt.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which is their little
they didn't
logistics.
Host a call?
No,
it's
just
really?
Crazy. And all of a sudden you had to wait. They basically side called the analyst. Then you had to wait for the analyst reports to come out to see what they were saying.
Oh, really?
The weirdest.
Interesting.
Huh.
I'm not sure if they still do that or not, but that was
interesting that can, goes through that well with.
Yeah, they would report their earnings, right? They have to report their earnings.
Yeah,
so there was
a
piece of paper, but then they just wouldn't have a call.
I feel like a lot of companies are also switching over to the model of just taking questions instead of.
Walk through the same
presentation.
Right.
They just skip right to the end and just
That's
take 5 to 10 questions and call it a night.
That's what everybody wants to hear anyway.
Yeah. Because we can all read anyways.
Hopefully.
Well,
nowadays I feel like the AI transcripts and stuff where they just embed the sentiment and stuff.
It's
kind of like.
Yeah, it does a really nice job.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get into it. Earnings, we're in the thick of it now. So just as a quick recap, when we met last week, Only 22 companies had reported, and we talked about some financials coming out of the gate strong. So that was 4% of the S&P 500. Today, we have 115. That's about a quarter of earnings are already done today. That's amazing. By next week on Wednesday, we'll have over 50% done. So we're definitely in the heart of it. And the early color that we're seeing across the board for sectors and industries are pretty much green through and through. So it's really amazing. On the earnings top line and bottom line, we're seeing positive surprise across the board, plus 2% for top line and bottom line plus 8 across every sector and industry kind of together. The only red we're really seeing is in a limited space, and that would be utilities. So early days, there's still most of the names to report. Earnings growth has been really, really strong. Top line plus 5.25, and earnings on the bottom line for growth is plus 10 almost.
That's big.
It's a huge number. So, I mean, there's still a lot of names to go, but all in all, we're seeing really tremendous strength this season. And it's very interesting. So,
well, I mean, revisions coming in the quarter two, though, we're getting blasted pretty good.
Yeah.
Right. So numbers were coming down outside of the Mag 7 type of names, I feel like. Right. If you ever see those revision charts, yeah, yeah. It's just like a nosedive,
yeah.
Like 4 or 5%. So maybe that's the.
Where the Mag 7s were kind of flat to slightly down. Yeah.
Right. So. Right.
Where your overall revisions were fine. But then if you strip out those Mag 7s, it was a lot worse. So maybe that's why.
Right.
But the stock reactions are actually surprisingly good despite the downward revisions.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, expectations relative to reality, I think, are what's helping propel some of those things. So, yeah, I mean, you know, when you look at some of the names that have come out in the holdings that we have, any surprises? I mean, what are some observations that, Tyler, that you've seen?
Well, not too happy about this one today, but Texas Instruments.
Yeah.
I mean, quarter over quarter, numbers were good. Revs beat, EPS beat, margins beat, but then EPS guidance was slightly weak, which really surprised me in the reaction of the stock being down 11, 12% today. Mm-hmm. And they missed by like, I think it was 5 cents on EPS for the midpoint. So that was a bit surprising to me, bit unfortunate, but other than that, I mean, I think on the positive side, Johnson & Johnson was a really interesting one. I mean, their whole business beat, like MedTech, yeah. Especially too, which has always been a kind of a weak area for them. So pipeline was strong. And that one actually had a really good reaction, which was positive for once, because I feel like Johnson & Johnson hasn't done anything for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Financials, I think, were started out positive. I mean, everybody kind of thought they would be, but they were. The one thing we haven't talked about yet is we haven't got anything necessarily industrial tariff related much.
Yeah.
We saw, and a name we don't own around here is GM reported yesterday, and they talked about, you know, I think it was $1.1 billion because of tariffs. So I think we'll start hearing more of that news, and we'll see how that impacts the rest of the companies. But I know, Kyle, you had several names that you recently added to the Contrarian Choice portfolio that have done really well, and those were nice surprises, like Home Builders I saw.
Some, yeah, yesterday was a big day for those.
Yeah, some life science stuff. That's so it's not just technology, and right, we have, you know, this is recording as Wednesday morning. We'll have Alphabet or Google tonight. We got, you know, and Tesla. Yeah. So we got some bigger kind of market moving, yeah. Besides individual stock moving things that are right. Coming up. So I think the next week's going to be really, really important. So, but so far so good, I think, on the overall.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking at the price action for every sector, kind of the breakouts based off of the kind of early earnings, the first quarter that we've seen come through. And one of the big surprises was, you know, you look at the big moves, the 1 day price change based off of what the earnings results are, and consumer discretionary has been a laggard for quite a while now. Like they've just been in the penalty box, and they are seeing the biggest kind of positive surprise there. And then, like you said, industrials, we haven't seen a lot of these names report yet, but as we've seen them come out, that first early preliminary glimpse, we've seen kind of a shift in kind of the leaders and laggards in the sector rotation. So we saw, you know, 2 months ago during the tariff tantrum, basically infotech, telecom, you know, communication services, industrials in a really strong leadership position. And now it seems like they're kind of barely hanging on to that. So the laggards of that group 2 months ago, where you saw UNH just tank healthcare, staples, utility REITs, materials, all of those are starting to see kind of green shoots now. So it'd be interesting to see kind of, you know, what, you know, develops with that. So kind of going into some of the key things that you're watching over the next month or so, next couple of weeks, in terms of sector rotations, is there anything that you're hoping to see in the earnings calls? Tariff related, I know we beat that to death, mm-hmm. I feel like, in the last couple of weeks. But what are some things that you're hoping to see between now and the end of earnings season?
Lisa, why don't you go on this one? Mm-hmm.
So like you mentioned, staples were pretty much laggards. How they're dealing with tariffs and are in the forefront of that. So I will be interested in how they are faring here, especially like a Walmart or Costco. I mean, they it can be really good, right? If they are disclosing, hey, we're actually dealing better with that than expected. We get maybe a little bit of more clarity. There's not much more clarity now, but at least a little bit more when it comes to inventories and consumers. So I think that could be interesting to watch, or will be interesting to watch how they are doing. Although they can benefit from the consumer trade down still. What we saw with Domino, for example, they mm-hmm. are taking share. One of the earlier fast food restaurants that are reporting. And when we saw that McDonald's, for example, all of that, they have troubles as well. So that is a good thing to see for them. So I would say more in the consumer staples, that will be interesting for me. We get a lot of information there on consumer health and tariff related in all in one sector. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the discretionary will be an interesting space. Like you said, it's been an underperformer, but I think that potentially has some catalyst. If this is a quarter that was starting to see tariffs, the real impact, you know, first quarter wasn't just started. So now we're starting to see it. So we'll see how the consumer is doing. We saw retail sales last week were pretty good. You know, things generally in the economy are getting, I think they were kind of slowing. Now I think they're stabilizing it. I think we're starting to see more green shoots. And I think that's kind of why the market's reacting the way it is. So it'll be interesting when some of these bigger kind of consumer, I mean, some of the names we saw yesterday, I don't know if there's some short squeezes going on, like Kohl's or something like that, are up, you know, 30%. No,
they're part of the new meme.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's
Kohl's will be a meme stock.
I
think CNBC had an article on it yesterday about Kohl's and one other name that is becoming the meme stock trade.
Just this morning, Krispy Kreme's up 40%. GoPro was up 70.
Yeah. So
morning.
That's why we have to be careful on some of these consumers. I think they're kind of beaten down, underfollowed. Right. So we have to kind of got to make sure you're kind of not just, that's why you like to see the bigger, you know, cap, kind of see how they're performing, not just these kind of smaller caps that mm-hmm. can get moved pretty quickly by smaller shareholder base.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to the point of Kohl's, I don't think they fit in this, but like the GoPros, like there's been a big trend lately about the consumer experience rather than consumers just buying products anymore, right? So your GoPro, if you want the experience and you want to remember it, what's the best camera to bring with you for mm-hmm. that GoPro?
But like, they were pretty beaten down over the last years.
Yeah.
They were like just on the downside, or
it's because no one was buying them.
Yeah.
No, they didn't. But then you've got like LVMH just took a big stake in Flexjet, right? So back to the experience thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing it's meme stock, but also like people are pumping it just for like the consumer experience type of stock.
But Krispy Kreme is actually interesting. I mean, they ended their partnership with McDonald's on that, which sparked interest and excitement in the first place. And now that is ending.
Yeah.
So it's interesting where that is coming from now.
Some of these moves are a little bit, when you start getting 30, 40, 50% moves, you kind of have to have a little bit of a side eye on those.
Right.
Just be careful.
Those are definitely a squeeze, but on your point, Tyler, on the experience thing, it does make me think back, you know, it's like everything is that's old is new again, right? It's like the that experience trade. I remember talking about it when I was at Oppenheimer 10 years ago, where it was, you know, experience over things. You had millennials where they didn't have the cash flow to be able to buy the thing. So you had all these new companies like Rent the Runway, and you had, you know, things where it was, you know, take a cruise because it's experiential. Mm-hmm. You're not buying so much stuff that, because either they couldn't afford it or, you know, what your shared mobility, right? Like there's a lot of interesting kind of concepts that are, that did exist, but are kind of coming back. So I do wonder if that does make a comeback now that kind of the economy is the way that it is. But on that note, Keith, for the price action moves, I've got a little list here on some of the big moves. And we were talking about this yesterday. D.R. Horton, Pulte, Northrop Grumman, they were all up plus 10% yesterday. Really,
those are big moves.
Huge moves for companies of those size, right? Yeah. So you're talking like 5+ deviation move, you know, in a day from normal. So, I mean, that statistically is very, very unusual. And then on the downside, same kind of thing. Lockheed Martin down 10.8% yesterday. MSCI, the data provider, down 9%. Philip Morris down 8.4%. That is a huge, huge move. That's a 5-deviation move for Philip Morris to move down like that in a day.
That's crazy. It's
just a crazy, crazy move. And then again, we were talking about, you know, this morning, Kohl's, Krispy Kreme, GoPro up 40, 40, 70. And then like, you know, Tyler, you noted Texas Instruments down 10.2% or whatever pre-market. So the volatility, like the outsized swings, you know, just curious what your take on the consumer or on the health of the market is. So Lisa, I don't know if you have any thoughts on like, is this normal? Does it feel, is it the new normal?
I just read an article about that yesterday and I can send it to you because I found it interesting. Like the influence that retail investors have, the more influence they have and like the you know, the bigger swings they are responsible for when they are trading. Mm. And I think kind of Wall Street always side-eyed retail investors a little bit, kind of dump money and they don't know what they're doing. When you look at meme stocks, you can argue that, but they're still making money with it, even if it's not, right?
At some point in time, you don't. Like AMC is an example.
Right, but it's like there is something to it. Mm-hmm. And for some people, it works. I mean, they will probably burn their money, their fingers down the road. But And overall, outside of meme stock, even retail investors get more and more influence, which is great that they're participating more. And I think kind of Wall Street is slowly realizing that kind of that it's not necessarily dumb money. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago in a podcast, that they're more experienced than ever, more skilled, more knowledgeable. Everything is easily accessible and not only for the Wall Street guys with their Bloomberg terminals and FactSet. It's easy accessible. People are more getting into it. They saw some sharp drawdowns with COVID and now April and saw that this is an opportunity for them. And I think that was part of why we had such a fast rebound because Wall Street was sitting on the sidelines mainly and retail investors were jumping in. So I think they're gaining more and more influence in the market and overall.
I think just looking at this list that you have here, though, like a lot of these companies, they've either done really, really well or they've been pretty bad. And so all of a sudden you get some little glimpse of maybe some hope and then people just pile into it. Mm-hmm. Right. So like IQV biotech funding hasn't been that great. You had Medpace Holdings report a phenomenal quarter yesterday and all of a sudden that whole space is jumping. Like MedP was up 50%. So then you bring the rest with you, like the IQVs, which is still a massive move for that size of company to be up 18%. But I think it's just, you get the glimpse of maybe biotech funding is truly coming back. Now let's pile into the space and get ahead of it. Mm-hmm. And it's like shoot first, ask questions later, right? It's not the ask questions first and then go.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just information flows quicker. I think trade actions is more volatile and it's, you know, good or bad. I'm not sure one way or the other. In the old, dating myself, it's like a big mutual fund manager. If they want to buy a name, usually did it over several weeks.
Yeah.
I think that's getting time frames getting compressed. We're like, mm-hmm. I want in now. The systems can handle it. The information's out there and my mind's made up. I'm going to buy it. And then I think that's part of the move. I think the retail side of things jumping in and out, I think that accentuates the volatility. And again, that just provides more opportunity. So I actually like the fact that, obviously you don't want to be on those big negative red yeah. ones and prefer a lot more green.
Right.
But I think that just creates more opportunity that things can be mispriced, up or down, mm-hmm. Based on some of the mm-hmm. facts, at least how we look at the world or I look at the world. So yeah, I think it's good. More people involved is a good thing, but it is surprising that these daily moves are getting, you and I talked about a couple of days yeah. ago. These aren't moves that normally with those kind of earnings reports that should move a stock 15-20%.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So something else is going on.
Do you think, so you kind of have a coding quant-esque background. Like could that be part of the quant system? Like all of a sudden you get triggered up 5 and then mm-hmm. you start to see a daily momentum, and then these quant strategies start piling into these names as well and just ramps up the volatility up or down.
Yeah, I that definitely is a part of it. All those, how many ever years ago it was, Flash Boys came out. Do you remember reading that?
Oh, yeah.
Right. So yeah, there's definitely a quantitative aspect of it, I think. I think, Lisa, you're exactly right on in terms of the retail investor. We were kind of putting around on our internal chat a couple of days ago, the rise of 0-day expiry options. So I feel like COVID, I don't know why, but it seems like if you look at the data, like
something has changed.
Something changed. Like I don't know if it was just like a coincidence where, Gen Z, millennial investors were old enough or they had more time or
time.
Whatever it was. But like in the data, there was, I think we were looking at a Goldman chart or something, and it was like COVID, and then the retail flows like quintupled.
It's also interesting because Schwab, for example, they opened in the April stock drawdown craziness. They since then, I think they opened 1 million new brokerage accounts.
Really?
1 million since that.
Wow.
And a lot of new money flowing into the market, and a lot of young ones especially.
Mm.
And Robinhood is seeing that as well. But Schwab especially, like 1 million new accounts only since April. Like this is insane.
Right.
Like how many new people are joining.
Well, and yeah, Robinhood, I didn't really think about them, but yeah, the rise of the mm-hmm. instantaneous trading. I can on my phone. Yeah, you
anymore.
Can open an account.
Like,
right.
24/7.
Before that, yeah.
Right.
Like years ago it was pretty expensive to trade.
Well, now there's no trades. Yeah. I mean, all the fee compression. Yeah. I mean, you're not a stranger to that. Yeah. Being on the institutional side, I remember talking about that and the early aughts and 2010s, where it was like, oh yeah, how to earn your active management mm-hmm. fee, and then the compression with ETFs and everything. So at that point, certain brokerage houses, even still today, some of them who will be left unnamed, to do a trade, it's, $15 to $20.
That's crazy.
Still, even today, when you can go to Schwab.
I had that in my former employer. Like with employee discounts, I think I had to pay for a trade 18 euros.
That's crazy.
Like for the buy and the sell.
Yeah.
If it was international, which US was international there.
Right.
It's even more expensive. Like this was insane. And that was 2023 and that's still going on. So,
well, I think the shift too. So like, I think it was COVID just time. Like I had buddies during COVID who would have CNBC on and because they're working from home.
Mm-hmm.
They have a TV in front of them. And they have CNBC on and they're texting me, should I buy this? Should I sell that? Should I buy this? It's like, right. So just, I think it's just millennials had more time starting to look at things a lot more and then realize that they do have money finally. And it could have been Gen Z as well, but like now I have money, I have time to actually like look at what investments are.
Right.
And I kind of like it. I kind of want to gamble a little bit. I'll buy the SPY, but then I'll gamble with this money and just have some fun. I shouldn't say gamble, but
no, but that's what I mean. It's entertainment. Part of it's entertainment, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
that. You like watching the stocks go up and down. And,
well, that goes back to the experience, right? You are experiencing that emotion,
the thrill,
right? Mm-hmm. The thrill. That's how you pay a nominal amount for a
don't forget about the agony.
And the agony. Well, that's experience.
That comes after the meme.
Casinos were shut down, so where else do you throw that money?
No, I think it's all.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
That is a good point. I never thought about that. Yeah.
It's entertainment for them. Then you look at longer term, you hear over time, you make a lot of money in the markets. And then there's social media with TikToks and influencers.
That exploded,
and then
So
I think that's all that, contributes to more people, which we like. With more people invest, it's good. It's good for the overall market. But I think it does create some of this volatility, I would say, from a professional standpoint. Again, which we can use to our advantage, hopefully.
But like we're on the, going back to the reporting, like earnings season, and like the stock jumps after hours is more institutional.
Yeah.
So like most of that move is already made, but then you get the extra, like when the market is finally open, you get that extra 4, 5, 6% because that stock then pops up on Robinhood's top movers list.
Yeah. People are like,
and people are like, oh, that one's moving. So I'm going to jump into it and just start flowing money into that stock. So I think that's where you get that extra bump up.
Well, speaking of volatility and bumping up and down, are there any names you're hoping that blow up this season?
None in my portfolios like today. Holy smokes.
Keith, what do you think?
Oh, that's a good question. What am I looking at?
Depends on if I'm looking for it for a portfolio or for my personal account.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like to see some names. Tesla's one I haven't owned for a while. I wouldn't mind seeing that kind of get hit pretty aggressively and kind of look at that again. So
to be able to get a better entry point.
Yeah, get a better entry point. That's a name that's going to, I think, can you pick your spots, you can trade it well. I don't generally trade. I usually kind of buy and hold it longer term, but I think that's one that I've seen it move, you know, 30, 40% quite often. I think there's an opportunity if it trades down again. I think that's a name that kind of fits some of the portfolios I look at. So it's a name I think would be interesting for me that I don't, to Tyler's point, it's nothing you own right now. Do you want to see get hit aggressively? So that
was, well, yeah, but on the buy list,
I would say some technology names too. Right now, I've been selling some of the not the big ones, but some of the other ones that when we benchmark and some of the portfolio processes that we do that I'm underweight technology, I generally like to be overweight. So I wouldn't mind seeing technology kind of sell off a little bit. Maybe we're seeing the green shoots, some of the other stuff working. I think that's where you could see that. And I think we're possibly seeing some signs of that.
Lisa?
I would say, like I said, some names in the staple sector, consumer discretionary that got hit hard by tariffs and all of that, which can now be kind of the opposite if they're reporting well and kind of well set up at least. Looking at that, but nothing in specific, I would say, generally.
Anything on your end?
For my personal account, I'd go with a Palantir blow up. I'd love that. Hopefully their defense is dragging their growth down and stock just blows up for a little bit and then jump back on in. For like actual portfolios, I actually would like to see Apple. I know it's drawn down quite a bit, but I'd like to see just like a full-on quarter blow up just so that all of that risk of AI is it going to be good enough? Is there going to be a super cycle? Just get that out of the stock just reprice it. And then I think that'd be my go-to name if I had to have one blow up.
Yeah. How about you, Kyle?
yeah, obviously nothing in the ultra concentrated portfolios, but I would say big index positions that I don't own that because of the concentrated nature, you know, we're able to be very, very active in our positioning and very different than the benchmark. So, you know, some of the healthcare space, we're completely naked, the pharma stuff. So they've already taken a beating this year, but it would be nice to see them take that. So
good.
All right. Well, and then instead of the spaghetti wall, since we're getting close to the end here, I've implemented a new thing called portfolio time machine. So it's kind of the inverse of what we just talked about. So, you know, pick a stock or asset you wish you would have bought 3 years ago, excluding the Mag 7.
Oh, I'm going to start before Tyler jumps in on this one. I'll start here.
He's already smiling.
I'm going Bitcoin. Coming.
Bitcoin, there you go.
How about that one?
Okay.
It's a good pick.
Looked, I'm like, a couple years ago, I was like, Bitcoin, and I looked at it, and it's like, I think right now Bitcoin's like 120,000, I think 119. Yeah. I think a couple years ago, it was like at 25, 3 years ago.
Wow.
Not bad. Yeah. I'll take a 3-4-Xer.
Yeah.
That's my pick.
Kyle?
I'm going with LEU, which is Centris Energy. I kind of kicked myself.
What is that? I don't know what it is.
I kicked myself.
He's making up stuff.
I've got a little basket of one-off Monopoly-esque, you know, kind of key stone companies that I keep an eye on. And I actually talked with the management team August of last year when the stock was trading at $39 or something like that. It's up 1,000% since then.
Whoops.
What they do is they are the sole refiner of SWU units for enhanced uranium. They are the only U.S. nuclear uranium enricher and refiner in the space. And so people caught wind as soon as the election was concluded, and so that stock just went to the moon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Missed out on that one.
Missed that one, yeah.
Lisa, what do you got?
Royal Caribbean Cruise. I would not do it personally.
Have you watched a documentary, by the way, on Netflix?
No.
Poop Cruise?
I saw it.
Okay.
I just watched that.
Yeah, I first looked close at it like right when COVID hit and everything was shut down. And kind of, I discussed with my former coworkers about like some hospitality names and especially cruise lines. And I nearly bought it, but I, for whatever reason, dumb reason, I did not. And it's up like 5 years, like 560%.
Oh, wow.
And over 3 years,
really?
875%.
It's funny that you say that because we actually.
And I really, took my time, but for whatever reason, I did not pull the trigger.
Mm-hmm. We actually bought that on the low on the Katrina Choice at that time, mm-hmm. 3 years ago, and COVID hit.
Mm-hmm.
And we sold a year later for like a double or something like that. But should have hung on to it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic name. And unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Keith will kind of despise this one, but SMCI.
Mm.
All right.
That one was big time.
That was a big one mm-hmm. for when AI started booming.
Yeah.
How's it been lately?
Well,
I just
not great,
but compared to three years ago.
It's fun to go back and see either ideas you were looked at or just something you completely missed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's,
I mean, you can
helpful.
Learn from that.
For sure.
You have to, but it's always hurtful if you,
right.
If you were close and didn't
if you were
the trip,
close and you put in your time and for whatever reason, you just, your gut said no. And then it's like, well.
I just remember SMCI, Keith, I felt like every day I was looking at it and be up like 10%.
Tyler.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was in the G33.
On that note.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Click and subscribe. And we'll see you next time.
Investing involves the risk of loss. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be regarded as personalized investment advice or relied upon for investment decisions. Jeremy Bryan, Tyler Ellegaard, Keith Gangle, Lisa Schreiber, and David Ama are employees of Gradient Investments, LLC, and may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. All opinions expressed by them and their guests are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of Gradient Investments, LLC. Please consult your independent investment advisor before making any investment decisions. The information herein is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the sole basis for making an investment decision. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. For more information, please request a copy of Gradient Investments, ADV Part 2A. Gradient Investments, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor.